This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
And you know, the African countries are developing or they are young. They do not want to, you know, receive some harsh sanctions that will negatively or strongly impact the economies.
That was Bright Opong Afum, a senior lecturer at the University of Mines and Technology in Ghana, who says some African countries want to use gold to reduce their reliance on the global financial system. Details coming up. Also, a U.S. general says preparations are in the works for the withdrawal of African Union troops from Somalia. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. A U.S. Marine Corps general who commands forces in Africa says stability and support programs for Somalia are in the works as the country prepares for the withdrawal of African Union troops in December. VOA's Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariama Diallo reports.
U.S. Marine Corps General Michael Langley, head of U.S. Africa Command, said that after meeting with Somali President Hassan Sheikh Mohamud and his top military general, Major General Ibrahim Sheikh Muhyiddin Addo, this past weekend, he's confident the country can manage its own security after the December withdrawal of the African Union Transitional Mission in Somalia, known as ATMIS. Langley's remarks in a virtual briefing to reporters Thursday came 2.5 years after the multidimensional mission was authorized by the UN Security Council, in part to help stabilize the country following years of insurgency by the militant group Al-Shabaab. General Langley says that Somali authorities have told him military operations in the southern and central parts of the country are focused on liberating some areas from the militants and stabilizing others.
Their operations are ebbing and flowing because I'll just use some of their narratives that, yes, they have a young army, it's a building army, so there are some successes and some setbacks. But I think the morale across the forces is building, and they're very enthusiastic that they're going to be able to keep Al-Shabaab back on their heels going forward in future operations.
In a briefing to the Security Council in June, Mohamed El Amin Swef, head of ATMIS, told the council that the threat posed by Al-Shabaab remains unpredictable, citing a recent attack on Somali security forces in the Galmudug region and a mortar attack on the ATMIS camp in Baidoa. He says the group still retains the ability to conduct devastating assaults. He said that although Somali forces supported by ATMIS have achieved significant gains in the fight against Al-Shabaab, support from international partners is essential to maintain the momentum. After visiting Somalia, General Langley arrived in Kenya, which contributes troops to ATMIS, where he says he plans to engage with the Kenyan military leadership to explore future prospects on how to help the Somali army hit its operational objectives.
They have been a tremendous partner with the Somali National Army, institutionalizing, professionalizing, helping them be able to operate in various areas, collaborating along their border to ensure that the defeat of Al-Shabaab.
In West Africa, U.S. troops recently withdrew from Niger, where they were ordered to leave after a military junta took power. Juntas that took power by force also rule Mali and Burkina Faso. General Langley says the way forward on security cooperation across the Sahel is still to be determined, but add that the U.S. forces will stay engaged.
In the interim, yes, we are pivoting to some degree of like-minded countries with democratic values and shared objectives and shared challenges across coastal West Africa. So, yes, we're in talks with Cote d'Ivoire, in talks with Ghana and Benin as well, as we start to reset and recalibrate some of our assets.
He says those countries are facing threats from terrorist groups like Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb, ISIS West Africa, and others. The groups, which initially operated in Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger, are now moving toward other countries across the region. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
The price of gold recently reached an all-time high, and the World Gold Council predicts that central banks will increase their gold reserves in the next year. Central banks in Africa are among the buyers and are turning to the precious metal to protect themselves from economic and geopolitical instability and to diversify their financial portfolios. Mohammed Yusuf reports.
In September 2023, the price of gold per ounce was $1,900. A year later, it was selling for $2,500. According to the World Gold Council, an international trade association for the gold industry, demand for the metal is expected to increase in the next 10 months, despite the soaring prices. Buyers of the precious metal include the central banks of some African countries. Some experts attribute the central banks' gold rush to the need to protect their local currencies and wider global economic and political uncertainties. Carlos Lopez is a professor at the Nelson Mandela School of Public Governance in South Africa.
In the last few years, because of the inflation and all these movements for stimulation packages and the rest, the returns are extremely low. So they are not getting any returns. On the other hand, gold is going up in terms of price because, you know, these big banks are also going after gold as a protection. So it is a very good investment to go to gold.
It tells that African gold production has grown by 60% since 2010, according to the World Gold Council, higher than a global increase of 26%. In 2022, Zimbabwe launched a gold-backed currency in an effort to curb inflation and foreign exchange rate volatility. Ghana and Uganda have been buying gold from artisanal miners to bolster their shrinking foreign currency reserves. Ghana, Africa's largest gold producer, plans to buy oil from other countries and pay them in gold to ease pressure on local currency and lower high fuel prices. However, some economists say gold cannot solve the economic problems of some African countries. According to the World Gold Council, countries should hold onto gold for its long-term value, performance during crisis, and its role as an effective portfolio diversifier. Bright Opong Afum is a senior lecturer at the University of Mines and Technology in Ghana. He says some African countries want to use gold to reduce their reliance on the global financial system.
If sanctions are laid on you, an African country, we know the devastating effects that it will have. And, you know, the African countries are developing or they are young. They do not want to, you know, receive some harsh sanctions that will negatively or strongly impact their economies. And because of that, they are strategically, you know, reducing their dependencies on these external countries.
Afum says that though some Africans know and understand the importance of gold, many trade away the metal to satisfy their daily needs.
So they just find a mere buyer who will, I always say that, will exploit them. You know, they give them less for their gold, and therefore they don't get it. Now, if the buyer is a foreign company or is a foreign person, then the gold leaves the hands of the local inhabitants, right? So they have not seen that need. They are all losing their gold just anyhow. They value it based on the need of their family.
The African Continental Free Trade Area introduced the Pan-African Payment and Settlement System, enabling countries to trade in local currencies. Experts say some continental payment systems, if implemented, can ease the economic pressure some countries are grappling with. That, in turn, might make them less dependent on gold. Mohammed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
Botswana and an American biotech firm, Ginkgo Bioworks, have partnered to conduct pathogen surveillance at the country's entry points. Health officials say the proactive move is meant to safeguard public health as the world faces emerging disease threats. From Habrone, Botswana, Mokandisi Dube reports.
Botswana introduced mpox screening last month for travelers at its entry points. In a statement Wednesday, Minister of Health spokesperson Christopher Nyanga said a pathogen monitoring program is critical to detecting similar emerging health threats.
In a proactive effort to safeguard public health, The Ministry of Health, in collaboration with Ginkgo Bioworks LLC, will on 16 September 2024 introduce a pathogen monitoring program in certain ports of entry. This new initiative is part of government's efforts to strengthen detection of new and emerging public health threats across Botswana's borders.
Dr. Mbatsi Mazwiduma, a public health expert, says the pathogen surveillance program will complement existing strategies to prevent disease threats.
The initiative by the Ministry of Health is a very welcome development, in the sense that at least it is demonstrating that they are both embracing traditional methods of surveillance and disease detection, plus at the same time they are looking at other innovative ways of disease detection.
Through the collaboration, Boston-based Ginkgo Bioworks will work with the Minister of Health to collect and monitor traveler samples. Nasal swab will be used to collect the samples. Nyanga says testing will be done on a voluntary, anonymous basis.
Although participation in this initiative is entirely voluntary, travelers are encouraged to participate because this early detection of pathogens is meant to safeguard the health of all citizens, visitors, and residents of this country. The samples collected will be kept anonymous. The data collected from the samples will be vital in strengthening the country's robust health system and response to public health threats and emergencies.
But Mazwiduma says voluntary participation in the pathogen monitoring program could hinder effective disease detection.
Perhaps if it is non-invasive and non-intrusive, then the technique should be compulsory, because at least it ensures that the number of people who comply to sample acquisition is increased, and therefore you can actually rapidly achieve suitable sample sizes for you to be able to ensure that, number one, you don't miss any patients, but also more importantly that it allows you to improve your validation of these particular technologies.
Botswana and Ginkgo Bioworks previously collaborated in a 2022 pathogen monitoring program to detect new and emerging COVID-19 variants. During the same year, Botswana was credited with the discovery of COVID-19 variant Omicron. Mqondisi Dube, VOA News, Gaborone, Botswana.
You're listening to African News Tonight on the Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. I'm your host, Yehiyas Wuhib, in Washington. And we'd love to hear from you. You can share your thoughts about the news and our programs by WhatsApp. The number is +1 202 258 3076. +1 202 258 3076. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing our listeners' comments on African News Tonight. Zimbabwe's government has introduced hefty fines of up to $5,000 for poor service in the country's telecommunication industry. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, where Zimbabweans are taking a social media celebrating the government's decision to allow Starlink to offer more affordable and better satellite internet service in a country that has one of the highest internet costs on the continent.
In a statement Tuesday, Zimbabwe's ICT minister Tendai Mabetera said the government will levy fines of between $200 and $5,000 per infringement for telecommunications companies and internet providers who fail to give reliable service. Willard Shoko, an independent high-speed internet consultant, says the new fines could result in a solid telecom industry that can compete in the entire Southern African region.
The motive behind that is to improve internet for the end user, but I think they should also consider improving the infrastructure sharing and also collaboration to improve internet not only for the region, but also for Zimbabwe and the region as well, because this is the foundation of the digital economy. So I think they should also look at how the internet can be improved and the partnerships that can help improve the internet.
Fungai Mandibei, Media and Corporate Affairs Executive at Econet Wireless, Zimbabwe's biggest telecommunications company, said the new regulations will be easier to comply with than those that existed before.
The new provisions introduce a new model of penalties, unlike the blanket penalty that existed in the previous statutory instrument. The new penalties are now linked to specific quality of service breaches that have also been clearly spelled out. There is now more clarity in defining what constitutes a quality of service breach and what penalty goes with a specific breach of the quality of service.
However, Christopher Musonza, an independent digital policy consultant, says the pressure to maintain internet service during Zimbabwe's frequent power outages may present challenges for telecom companies.
For the telecoms provider, it's going to be tough. The economy is not performing as anyone would want. We've got issues to do with long hours of load shedding. So telecom providers have to power their base stations for long hours to ensure that they meet the performance, the key performance indicators. So imagine running a generator for most of the day to ensure that you avoid a fine. I'm not sure what will cost more, trying to keep up with these economic factors or just paying the fine.
Zimbabweans have long complained about poor and expensive telecommunication service. Shoko says that is the reason why they are welcoming this month's approval of Starlink's license to operate in Zimbabwe.
They can now easily get internet access from anywhere in Zimbabwe at an affordable price, thereby bridging the digital divide. That's one major thing for the end user. For the local ISP in Zimbabwe, there's a massive opportunity that Zimbabwe can take an advantage of: investment in ground infrastructure. Currently in Africa, Nigeria has the only two ground stations that are servicing the whole of Africa. If Zimbabwe government and local ISPs can work together with Starlink to provide ground stations in Zimbabwe, this will allow local ISPs to provide internet to Starlink and provide better latencies in the region. So this will improve internet, Starlink internet, for local Zimbabweans as well as the region.
The US-based satellite company Starlink, owned by Elon Musk, has established a presence in several other African countries, including Botswana, Kenya, Mozambique, Nigeria, Rwanda, and Zambia. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News, Harare.
Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump met for what could be their first and only presidential debate on Tuesday. The early numbers suggest that more than 60 million people tuned in to watch the matchup. The race between the two candidates remains tight. VOA's Dora McQuarrie explores whether the debate changed people's minds about who to vote for.
Polls taken immediately after the presidential debate on Tuesday suggest Vice President Kamala Harris outperformed former President Donald Trump. But that isn't swaying either candidate's strongest supporters, like these Trump voters.
I know that under Trump, the economy was much better than it has been under Biden. I think his abortion issue comments were pretty strong.
Trump actually secured the border. Why should we have these criminals in our country invading and then basically polluting, harassing, and destroying our communities?
Or these Harris supporters.
I thought she was on fire. She was succinct. She was sure of herself. She spoke policy. She was positive when he was negative.
I am so glad that she is touching on some of the tough issues on the economy, on abortion, on immigration. These are the things that we need to continue to see progress on.
Some Trump supporters felt that the moderators, journalists from ABC News, were unfair to their candidate.
It seemed like they're fact-checking him, but not fact-checking her. So what she's saying is a lot of lying going on. I'm very frustrated by it.
We already knew what this debate was going to look like. It's favored one candidate than the other.
I'm a little frustrated because I think she's had a lot of airspace on things that Democrats are going to be super excited about.
Meanwhile, fans on both sides felt the vice president successfully goaded the former president.
Trump, you know, I think that he got baited a couple times with some of her personal jabs, like his rally sizes, people leaving his rally early. She brought that up, I thought, very strategically.
It's very clear that she's on her best game and that she's willing to take him on in a clear way.
Early signs suggest that neither candidate performed strongly enough to win over significant numbers of undecided voters, the very people who could decide the election.
I don't know how much it's going to move the needle for anybody that still hasn't made a decision yet. I thought they both had good moments, both had bad moments.
I feel like they're both not the right candidate for me, based on this debate and the past debates. Still, I'm still undecided.
There might not be another presidential debate to help him decide. While Harris's team is calling for another matchup, Trump says he is less inclined to debate Harris a second time. Dora McQuar, VOA News, Washington.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Severe flooding in northeastern Nigeria has left 30 people dead and affected more than a million others. The collapse of a major dam in the state of Borno on Tuesday caused some of the state's worst flooding since the same dam collapsed 30 years ago and prompted many residents to flee their homes. The state government said the dam was at capacity due to unusually high rains. The flooding comes nearly 2 years after Nigeria's worst flooding in a decade, killing more than 600 people across the country. State police spokesperson Nahum Dasso has told the Associated Press that about 15% of Maiduguri, the capital of Borno State, was underwater. An aide for the governor of Borno said 1 million people have been affected, adding that as efforts to document displaced people begin, that number could rise to up to 2 million.
VOA Africa has a wide variety of programs for you. News, lifestyle, health, politics, youth, women, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, television, and the internet on voaafrica.com.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent, 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Bob Bass, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.